I can't tell you how much we enjoy being here and enjoying consistent electricity and constant water and a host of other things. Endless babysitting has been very nice. Although they're running up quite a bill. I'm billing them for keeping the kids. But before I get started, I do want to briefly mention, we are also going to give some presentations at my parents' house this Saturday and then the following week on Friday and Sunday. And we hope to be able to go into a little more detail, share a few more stories, have more time for questions. So if you have are available, we would love to see you. If you do want to come, please let us know so we can have an idea of what to plan for. And also, we do send out email updates with the birth of Mark and Adjustment to Life in Senegal. We send out nowhere near as many as we thought we would. But there is a sign-up sheet out in the hallway there where you can sign up to receive those. And I just want to share that briefly before we get started. But it has been a very interesting last 3 years to think about it. We left the United States January 1st, 2009. And we did come back a year and a half ago. We came back for about 6 weeks before going to Senegal, but it's really been 3 years since we lived in the United States. We were shocked the other day when we went to the grocery store. We see that some prices have changed, some things have gone up. God has done a lot. And I wanted to share briefly a few ideas from Scripture. I'm not going to read specific passages because I wanted to give a quick overview of the first few books of the Bible to put it to perspective some of what we've been feeling the last few years. When you read the book of Genesis, you have creation, God's creation is good, you have the fall, you have things looking very bleak with the flood and Noah, and then we have this bright spot with a promise made to Abram. And you feel like there's a hope. God makes a promise, you will be great, through you, all the families in the entire world will be blessed. Your descendants will be more numerous than the stars in the sky. And as you read the book of Genesis, you kind of have to think, why is this taking so long? God made this incredible promise, and for Abraham, you have to think, okay, that's awesome, and about maybe a year or two, I'm going to have a son. This is going to be great. But he keeps waiting. And so then he eventually has a son, and we read about Isaac, and he's still not a great nation. His descendants are still not as numerous as the stars. This story goes on and on, and then we get to the end of Genesis, and everyone's in a different country, but it's not the country where they're supposed to be. And the book of Exodus begins with God's people in slavery. And if you were to imagine, if this were to be a movie, probably everyone would get up and walk out and say, this movie's taking way too long. Can we get to the part where the good guys win? I'm losing patience here. But it's all happening according to God's timing. And even with Israel, they come out of Egypt. God delivers them. And you think, okay, straight away, they're going to the promised land. But they don't go. There's numerous years pass. And you have to feel for different leaders in Israel who had to be getting impatient and thinking, God, can we not speed this up? I want to see your name glorified. I want to see that promise that was given to Abraham fulfilled, where all the families in the entire earth will be blessed through the descendants of Abraham. I want to see that happen. But God is saying, you have to wait. You need to wait. This is all happening according to my timing. And that thought, whenever I have reflected on the first few books of the Bible and how God's timing is nothing like our timing, that has been a huge encouragement to myself and to our family when we think about our time in Senegal. Because we had a plan for where we thought we would be at the end of our first term as missionaries. The ministries we thought we would be involved in, the level of our language skills. We had a plan for all of this, and it's not exactly what we had planned. The first year and a half, someone actually went even better than we had planned. We went to France. We had planned for a year and a half to study French, and we finished 2 months early, and we thought, this is great. Bring on Senegal. Here we go. And we went to Senegal, and the square wheels got put on, and we slowed down tremendously. And it took a lot of adjusting to that. But through that, we have seen God do what he wanted to be done. And that's what I'd like to share tonight. The ways in which God did work through us in particular the last year and a half in Senegal. And while we didn't get done anywhere near as much as we had hoped we would, we got done, we feel like, exactly what God wanted us to. And so that's what we like to share. And I'll share, first of all, some a personal update of, before getting into some of the ministry we're involved in, some of what our first term was like. And I'll begin with an update of the kids and how they adjusted. There's Mark and Addie in their Senegalese clothes. And here's a few pictures of Addie with one of her best friends from school. Her name is Mommy Yassine, and she came over to our house several times a week. And when I share about how Addie adjusted, all I can say is she made us very envious. I look at the passage of 1 Timothy 6, where it says, you know, we came into this, let me read it real quick. There's great gain in godliness with contentment, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. If we have but food and clothing, with these we will be content. And I've realized that over my 34 years, I have added quite a list of other things that I think I need to be content. And when we looked at Addie and how she adjusted to life in Senegal, for her, she had food, she had clothing, she had friends, family. That was it. We remember the first few months we had power cuts, which were very new to us. We had no idea what to do. And there were times when we were in tears. It is so hot. We are sweating. We don't have fans. We are in the dark here. And we would get a flashlight, and Addie was thrilled that we could do shadow puppets on the wall. And that amused her to no end. And we would then be in tears of laughter. And so she just did a tremendous job of adjusting to life in Senegal. Here's a few pictures of her at her school. She's at a French school. So she's become fluent in French, does very well in that, and has just adjusted incredibly well. And she certainly has adjusted to life in Senegal the easiest of us four. After that, we had the arrival of Mark in December 26th of 2010. And for Hillary, those first 6 months in Senegal were very difficult. If you can imagine, our inside the house was generally in the 90s with high humidity. And she was pregnant with a boy who would be born at 9 pounds, 4 ounces. So those were incredibly difficult months for her. And she was so thrilled when he was born. And here's a picture of the hospital where Mark was born in Thiès, Senegal, where we lived. And it was a very basic hospital. It was, like we say, a BYOTP hospital. Bring your own toilet paper. And also a BYOIV. Right before the C-section, I had to go down to the basement or to the first floor and buy the IV, buy all the medicines that we needed. You have to pay up front. So it was an interesting experience. There's on the top left, that was my bed. My cot's in the left corner there. And on the bottom right, there was our bathroom, and we didn't have water about the whole time. And that was the private room. So we splurged and got the luxury suite there. But sometimes we look back at that and we say, wow, why did we do that? That was pretty difficult. And Hillary spent numerous hours at the waiting room, and we still have no idea how waiting rooms work in Senegal. We just show up and eventually we see a doctor. We still don't exactly understand how the process works. But when we look back at that, that slowed us. Having Mark born there, going through that process of, for Hillary, going through the process of childbirth, We probably could have accomplished so many other goals that we had as far as language learning or Hillary being involved with the church and getting to know some of the other ladies in the church. We could have done so much more had Mark not been born. But it is interesting to talk to our neighbors and to talk to people. And when they hear that we had a son born in Senegal, they love it. And they're like, oh, you have a Senegalese son. And you got to give him a Senegalese name. And his Senegalese name is Abraham, or Ibrahima in Wolof. And everybody loves that. And everyone always tells us, you know, most of the white people, they leave the country or they'll go into the capital. And that's so neat that she had the baby here. And so we see that God doing things that we had not planned. There's something now that having a son who is dual nationality, who is Senegalese and American, and people love that. They make a huge deal out of that, and in some ways we've become closer to our neighbors through that than we ever could have by working on our Wolof or working on our other language skills. So again, God's timing is perfect, and we were so encouraged to see how God delivered our baby to us safely, and it was very encouraging. Here's the top left was the anesthesiologist, the top right's the surgeon, and then there was the midwife there on the bottom there, some of the hospital staff. And a few other pictures of Addie with Mark. She was very, very proud. And that brings us to somewhat of... that goes through the kids. Our adjustment to Senegal was, as I've hinted at, was much, much more difficult. One of the things we adjusted to is when we went there, we had a desire to learn Wolof. We had spent a year and a half in France before getting to Senegal. And it was somewhat discouraging when we landed in Senegal and nobody spoke French. We got off the plane, or everyone was speaking in Wolof. Now, any one of these people we could have spoken French with, but we quickly learned that everyone prefers Wolof. French is the language that they speak if they have to. If it's necessary for work or something like that, they speak it and they can. But nobody prefers to speak it. Wolof is everyone's heart language. And I would say it would be similar to us. We could speak French at the house, but we almost never do. We speak English. We're more effective in communicating in English. It's easier. We're less tired after we're done communicating in English. So it's that way with Senegalese. French is their second language, and we believe we made the correct decision in going and learning French first, because I do teach in French, and most of our ministry will be in French. But Wolof is a huge part of adjusting to life in Senegal. And here's a picture of our Wolof teacher, Mamadou, and a picture of Mark sitting at his feet. And Mark loved it when Mamadou came over. And to give you a little bit of the flavor of what life is like in Senegal, Senegal is 94% Muslim. Mamadou, our Wolof teacher, he was Muslim. But it was interesting. He would repeatedly give us advice on how we could share the gospel with people. He would say, now you want to be careful not to do this because you'll alienate everyone in the neighborhood and people won't listen to you if you do that. So if you're going to share the gospel or you're going to talk to people, if you're going to talk to kids, be sure you get the parents' permission first. And we're sitting here thinking, really? Is he giving us all these tips on how to share the gospel with other Muslims? And he was. It was. But that's Senegal. And it's interesting. We had neighbors when we introduced ourselves. Told them we were missionaries, and they said, oh, that's great. Missionaries do such good things for our country. We're very glad that you are here. And they were Muslim. They're still Muslim. So it's it was interesting to see that. But there's one picture of us in our efforts to learn Wolof. As I mentioned, we had hoped to, after a year and a half, be at least a conversational level in Wolof, but we are not. If I go to the corner store, I can impress people if I talk for 2 minutes and shut up. But if I go for that third minute, people know that I've run beyond what my capacities are. And so when we go back, we do plan to pick that up. And we hope to pick up our Wolof studies more. Other than that, you see Mark there with the heat. That was a huge adjustment. during the summer, we saw all of our friends in Dallas complaining about the heat, and we kept thinking, but it's 75 degrees inside. I don't understand. So heat, that was a big adjustment for us. You see the top right there, the horse cart with the body of a car on there. Driving in Senegal was quite the interesting example. The bottom there, that was 2 days before Mark's birth. The water pressure in the house was only good enough to get into right here. So Addie was filling up the bucket there with water, and I was bucketing it into the washing machine so that we could wash clothes. Since then, we did buy a reservoir. We figured since we're washing diapers and going through a lot of this, let's save us some time and a lot of headaches. But some of these things, adjusting to life in Senegal, just took time. There's a picture of Hillary carrying the babies the way that the Senegalese women do. I'll come back to that. And for us, one question that we've often got is, what was the toughest thing? When you moved to Senegal, what was the toughest thing to adjust to? And I always have such a hard time answering that question, because it wasn't like there was one thing that just made our lives horrendous. But there was about 30 little things that just added up and added up and added up. And not being able to walk out in public as just another average person was very difficult. It was just hard to be walking down the road and have someone say, "Hey, white guy." I'm like, "My name is not white guy." Which didn't happen all the time, but that would happen. Or the water cuts, the power cuts, wanting to go out on a date with my wife and there's only one restaurant in town that we like. There were so many little things like that that just add up. And it became very difficult. Another difficult thing is we're there. We see so much need around us, so much poverty, and not knowing what to do or how to help. There's a on the top left there is our house helper, and Hillary especially has done a lot with trying to reach out to her and help her. She is Catholic. Her home situation is extremely difficult. On the right there, you'll see a picture, and you'll see my dad is in there, and I can't see if mom is in. Yeah, I think so. And Lauren is in there when they came over to visit. This is another family that we've been able to help out a few times. But in general, that is so difficult for us to know how to help. And the past year and a half, I've gone back frequently to the book of Proverbs, and when you read about wisdom, and it's interesting, you have the law. God gave the law. He gave the commandments. He gave Leviticus. And you could read through all of those commandments and think that, okay, that's it. We've got it all. God told us everything we need to know to live. But He didn't. There were still so many situations in life that you can't address with a law. You cannot address with a rule. And when you read the book of Proverbs, you get that idea of the complexity of life. Sometimes you rebuke a fool. Sometimes you don't. When you look at poor people, sometimes they're poor because they were lazy. Sometimes they're poor because the system is unjust. And there is no simple answer to life's problems. And when we look at the poverty in Senegal, it's like that. It's hard to say. And for us, it was just extremely difficult to know. I have no idea if this guy is scamming me. I have no idea if this guy really needs help. And the easy thing would be to say, well, we're just never going to give to anybody. I don't think God wants us to do that. While that might be the simplest, God wants us to have a giving heart. That has just been very difficult for us. And quite honestly, that has probably been one of the more stressful things, is constantly leaving the house and being confronted with poverty and people wanting help, but just not knowing what to do. And that, in many ways, has reconfirmed our vision, reconfirmed our original calling for what God called us to do. And in case there are some of you who may not remember when we were here last and shared, we feel that God called us to Senegal, not necessarily to be the primary evangelist, but to equip the church, so that the Senegalese church can lead the way in evangelism, so that the Senegalese church has the tools that that the church needs to respond to poverty, to respond to the lack of understanding of the gospel. And that's what we want to see happen. We want to see Senegal is a strongly Muslim country, but there's this huge open door. There's this religious freedom, and the church has really grown in the last 15 years. We want to equip the church to be able to meet these needs. And our experience has reconfirmed that really is what needs to happen. It needs to be the church responding to these needs. And an example is if someone needs $50 to see a doctor, if we give 20, they might wonder, well, that's all you're going to give? Is 20 bucks? But if someone from the Senegalese church gives 5, they are incredibly grateful. And they knew that was a huge sacrifice for them. And for us, we're still struggling with that. And we have no answers. It's interesting, I ask every missionary who's been in Senegal for a number of years these questions. How do you handle requests for money? And nobody has a great answer. But for us, we have realized the Senegalese church can do this. They have a much better understanding of the culture, a much better idea of how to respond to the needs that are in Senegal, both the physical and the spiritual needs. They have a great understanding of that. And here's a picture of a meeting I was able to sit in. Our mission organization, World Venture, has been involved with a number of churches. There's maybe about 10 years ago, there was 2 churches in the TS area that had been planted from World Venture missionaries. And now there's, I think, around between 10 and 15. Many of those out in villages, in village evangelism. And myself, I've been able to be a part of meeting with some of the other church leaders. And that is something I had not, again, something I had not planned on. But I see in the future a great opportunity to come alongside so many of these church leaders who are struggling and to encourage them in a non-formal setting. My primary job is teaching at the Bible College, but there's been so many other opportunities that we've seen of church leaders that are leading churches, and there's just a lot of difficult situations in these churches. A lot of people who didn't grow up in Christian homes, converted from Islam. There's always the physical needs. So that has been an encouragement to us to reconfirm our calling, and to also see and meet some of these leaders, and to realize that they're doing a really good job. There are so many. I think of the church in TS where we live. They've been a part of founding a hospital and a school for elementary school for kids. Do numerous evangelistic outreaches in villages, and they've done some in TS. It's been very encouraging to see what God is doing through the church and to reconfirm our calling. As far as prayer requests for Senegal, one is continue to pray that our vision would become more and more reality. In April, I was able to go to a conference that had all of the evangelical churches and missions organizations. They all met. There was probably between 80 and 100 different leaders there. And it was so encouraging that there was only a small handful of those people present were from Western countries. It was predominantly Senegalese church leaders or church leaders from other African countries. And the topic of the conference for 3 days was, how are we going to take the gospel to the unreached parts of Senegal? And that was the topic. How do we do it when we don't have much money? What are our options? And to see them thinking through those options was incredibly encouraging. And to think that okay, we can have a part in coming alongside these guys and equipping them. And that was a huge encouragement. And continue to pray with us that would develop more and more. Another prayer request relates to the country in general. The political situation at the moment is somewhat tense. There's the 85-year-old president who's wanting to sit for a third term, which is against the Constitution. Here's some important dates. 27th, the high court in Senegal will declare whether or not he's eligible to run. And then there's some other dates for the first round of elections. If someone gets 50% of the vote, then that's it. He's president. If not, there's a second round of elections where the top two are then only voted for. In the first round, there's a huge amount of candidates. I don't even know how many candidates there are. But be praying for peace in Senegal. Traditionally, Senegal has always been peaceful. There has never been any serious unrest in Senegal. But this is a unique situation with the president currently wanting to ignore the Constitution in this sense. So be in prayer for that. In 1 Timothy 2:1-2, we're praying for peace, that the church can continue to do the ministries that the church is involved in. And of course, if things do go as we would not like them to, be in prayer that the church would be ready for no matter what happens. Aside from that, some of the specific ministry updates. Here's a kids club that Hillary was involved in with Addie's school. Again, this is something that had nothing to do with our vision of what called us to Senegal, but it's a French school, mostly European, or most of the kids have at least one European parent. And so it's much more secular. It's not Islamic at all. But several of the moms, or a handful of the moms, went and asked the lady on the far left here, Daniela, would you teach the Bible to our kids? And we're sitting there scratching our heads, really? And Daniela explained to them, you know, we're not Catholic. We're Protestant. And they said, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Go ahead and teach them. And Hillary was a part of teaching these group of kids every Friday afternoon Bible stories. And it was incredible to see these kids listening to the Bible stories, singing songs. At times it was also difficult and discouraging to realize that a lot of these kids especially have fathers who do not think highly at all of religion in general. And so they're getting very negative responses to religion at home. But we were very thankful for the opportunity that Hillary and Daniela had to minister to these kids. There's a few more pictures. Aside from that, we went there wanting to work part-time with street kids, and we didn't know what that would look like. It was great to meet Luis and Daniela. Daniela, who Hillary worked with, they moved to Senegal to work with street kids. In Senegal, there are a lot of families will send their kids to Muslim schools so that the Muslim teacher can teach their kids the Quran. What often happens is these kids will be forced to wake up about 5:30 in the morning. They'll recite the Quran. They recite it by rote in Arabic. They don't understand any of it. They're beaten if they don't understand it. And then during the day, they go out into the streets to beg money to bring that back to the Muslim teacher. Luis and Daniela opened up a home where they invite some boys. This is a picture of a house where a lot of these street kids live in the Muslim schools. It's usually an unfinished house that's just a concrete slab. There's no beds. There's no nothing. And that's where they live. And I can't remember. Here's a picture of the boys. These are boys that were in that situation, and they actually decided that it would be easier to live on the streets. They left their Muslim schools and chose to live on the streets, thinking that would be easier for them. And it probably was. Luis and Daniela have gone out on the streets and found some of these kids and invited them into this home, where they hear gospel stories every week. They're being taught how to read and write. We were able to come in at the end and just play with the kids. And that was somewhat our limit. These kids do not speak French, and our Wolof is very basic. So we were very limited, and when we get back, we hope to get much more involved in advancing in Wolof. But that is a big heart, or something that we are very much drawn to, is helping in that area. And then finally, these are some of my students. I was able to teach two classes, church history and New Testament theology, were the classes I was able to teach. And it was very encouraging. Especially for me, I know many times I would teach different things from the Bible. And I would teach things thinking, I have no idea how I'm going to come up with an application. You know, whenever you preach a passage, you tend to think, I want to come up with an application. I want to think about my audience, who's listening. How can I come up with an application that's relevant for them, that can speak to their situation? And so often I would go to class and think, I don't know how to come up with an application. These guys have situations that are so different from mine and different from what I grew up with that I don't know how to do it. But it was so encouraging to show up in class, and maybe in New Testament theology we were talking about how Jesus is presented in the Gospel of John, and or how Luke responds to the situation of poverty in his Gospel. He writes more about the situation of poverty than the other Gospel writers. And I wouldn't have an application in mind, but my students, I would ask them, how do you think this applies in your situation? And for them, it was easy. They appreciated someone presenting the Bible to them, but as far as the application, in a sense, I didn't have to do it. They were very skilled. They knew their cultures. They knew how the Bible applied. They just wanted someone to help them understand the Bible better. That was a huge encouragement to me, and I cannot tell you how many days we were thinking, what are we doing here? Why are we sticking it out? And I would go and teach and have a conversation with my students, and I would come back home, share with Hillary some of what was going on, and we were like, that's why we're here. This is what we're here for. This is a tremendous encouragement. Had students, too. One of these guys is from Gabon. I always pronounce it in French, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right in English. But he's a leader at his church in Gabon, and he's going back there at the end of this year. The other students are Senegalese, and they were a huge encouragement to me. And again, that is really what has called us to Senegal, is to see leaders in the church to be developed and raised. And one quick story I remember I thought about a few years back, whenever the Da Vinci Code, that book. You remember when the book and the movie was very popular, and it was on CNN. There was all of this this buzz about the Da Vinci Code. And I remember one of the professors at Dallas Theological Seminary wrote a book about it. And someone told me he wrote that book in 1 week. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. But I thought, how awesome is it that in America we have certain church leaders that whenever there is something that comes up, they can respond to that. There are people like, it was Daryl Bach who wrote that book, Ravi Zacharias. There are evangelical leaders that provide us with great resources. And I thought, does Senegal have leaders like that? And I would love to be a part of equipping and grounding some of these church leaders in the Bible so that then they can respond to the cultural challenges. What are the Da Vinci Code issues in Senegal? And how can they be equipped and be ready to lead the way and lead the church in that? And that is a huge encouragement, something that pushes me on to think about that. And I will close with one brief story. Before we left, the director for African missionaries with our mission organization, he told us, you know what, if you get to the end of your first term and you have a desire to come back for a second term, we consider that a successful first term. If you have a desire to come back and you're not throwing in the towel, we consider that successful. When we left, we thought, he's setting the bar really low. That's a very low standard. Surely we can do more than that. Having gone through that first term, we realized, you know what, that was a great goal to be sure. And it's very interesting to get through Senegal and to now be back here and to be having some of the things that we miss so much, and to realize I love here walking around, and I don't have to have shoes on and my feet won't get sandy. The floors are not just filthy dirty all the time. Or I love being able to eat fried chicken at Bojangles, or so many things. But now, the other day I was thinking, okay, I look at all those things and I compare that to being able to equip the church leaders in Senegal. And I think, you know what? This is, God did the work of in our lives in that first term of giving us enough encouragement to where we want to come back. And now that we're back here in America, I think my desire to want to then go back is even greater. And even though I certainly am enjoying so many things here right now, and consistent electricity and faster internet, none of those have diminished what God has called us to do in Senegal. And we are so thankful for that. Now, I'll just briefly pray as a being thankful to God for His grace. Dear God, I want to thank You for Your grace. When we are weak, Your glory is on display. And I thank You that You have shown us how we are weak. And I pray that You will continue to make that aware to all of us, so that whether it's in Senegal or here in Greensboro, that we can shine for Your glory. I pray in the name of Your Son and by the power of Your Holy Spirit. Amen.